Hello, and welcome to Nerd Swap. I'm your host, Tim Burke, and I'm joined today by...
Ryan Malo.
And we're here to talk about, I think for me at least, one of the more important Spider-Man stories, and that is J. Michael Straczynski's first Spider-Man story, and that is Amazing Spider-Man Coming Home, I believe is the official story. It started in issue 30, volume 2. And that's a lot of confusion, a lot of numbers, but... When they relaunched Spider-Man after the 90s, it wound up on issue 30, and that's where we start this.
Right, yeah, it's got a double numbering. It's like number 30 and number 471.
Yeah, because they wanted to give up the old numbering system, but then they didn't want to.
I wonder if that's, you know, pushback from nerds or a way to make them both happy or
well,
what.
Well, they folded it back in at 600, right? I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but when they got to issue 600, they stopped numbering it as...
Right, but when did they start the... I guess 30 before, but why did they...
Why did
What happened at 441? Or is that numbering right? Don't remember, but either way, this was... I don't know. Spider-Man was always, you know, a cool character, somebody that I liked, you know, liked the idea of and checked in on from time to time. But, you know, this Straczynski run, some of the best stuff ever.
8 years. Comics. 8 years of fantastic storytelling.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So I guess with this, I mean, yeah, like Ryan was saying, Spider-Man's always been very interesting, but with this, they kind of make you reevaluate the history of Spider-Man, right? I mean, what's the important question?
Yeah, did the radiation enable the spider to give Peter the powers, or was the spider trying to give powers before the radiation killed it?
And it's crazy. I mean, it took them, 50, 60 years before they asked that question? I mean, no, not at that point, but 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. And it totally got away from the typical, you know, hero, bad guy scenario. And it was more, why is he a hero or what made him that? And, you know, it got into deeper storytelling and just more, more thorough.
I think this was one of the gateways for me to come back to the Marvel Universe, because I think at this point, when I started reading this book, whatever, in like 2001, yeah.
I think it's early 2001?
It is, because it's after six issues. It's
right, the 9/11 issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's I had been really DC heavy at that point. Like, Batman was all I read. I had so many Batman books. From that time.
It's around Wanted, right? Around
that. Yeah, with Bruce Wayne, Fugitive.
And, Fugitive, yeah.
Yeah. And, I don't know, Matt, was it like our friend's friend, had told me that I should read this, and I was like, okay. And then he showed up one day with a bumper edition of the first three issues, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I need to be reading this.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, I mean, you could just tell, I mean, not only the storytelling, but then they got Romita Jr., doing the art, and you know, anybody who knows comics knows he's easily one of the best.
Well, yeah, and up until this point, I mean, Straczynski he'd done Babylon 5. He was been a TV writer forever, and he had done the Joe's Comics imprint over at Top Cow and Image.
Speaking of what was, what the hell was the series?
What, Rising Stars?
Yeah. Was that before this?
Rising Stars, I think, ended after he started this, but it started well before.
Okay. I know there was a long gap
there was a long pause,
3 year gap between the last issue.
Yeah, well, there was like a trickle though, like right? Wasn't there like it was like 2 years and then one issue and then 1 year and then one issue and then like 6 months and then one issue. It was it was tough, but we still love you, Joe. We love you, man. Straczynski, so nice. Gave me a free T-shirt because I told him I love him. Joe's Comics shirt.
Nice. That's all it takes, huh?
Yeah, whatever. It's the truth, and I got a free T-shirt for it. But yeah, he had done that in a lot of independent work, and then he came over to Marvel, and whoo.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else. There was this. There was the Rising Star. A couple other things.
Well, he did Thor after this,
right?
Which was a great run on Thor. I mean, that's what the first movie was based on. Really.
Yeah. I mean. Yeah. The costume. I mean, all that stuff.
Different, but it's
right.
Based on it.
And then not long after that, he ended up going back to DC, right?
Yeah, he did that Superman Year One, right? With the relaunch of, like, they had the Year One Universe, or Earth One, I guess is what.
Right.
So they did Batman Earth One, Superman Earth One, and Wonder Woman Earth One, and he did the Superman story. But then he also did Wonder Woman, and then he did Action Comics.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing with this storyline or all the Straczynski stuff that holds a place in my heart as being so awesome, I can't divorce that from the bitterness I feel after he left and what they did to it.
Yeah.
You know, you get those feelings of, man, it's so great. And then it immediately it's just.
Yeah. Before we get into the book, I mean, the 8 years that Straczynski was on this book, even when it was like not great, I mean, compared to the rest of it, it was still like good, like really good.
Right. It was still trying to do real stories and genuine things and not just the campy.
It came a far way away from the camp, I feel. And then, like, what, the day he left.
He just undid it in one issue.
It was like they opened the floodgates of camp on Spider-Man. And right, well, and covered
we
saw it.
We were at Comic-Con, and Joe Quesada was there. And I'm trying to think. I think it was before the Dan Slott stuff came out.
And before the One More Day stuff.
Right. And he was talking about how the worst, I think the quote that he said in person, or we were there, and he said, the worst thing that ever happened was allowing Peter to get married to Mary Jane.
Yeah.
And they just completely undid that whole thing. And the reason that he thought it was bad was clearly commercialism.
Yeah.
It's the same thing about like aging, what are their names? Franklin and whatever the other
kid. Oh, yeah, the son and daughter of
Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Yeah, because anytime you show aging and you show an arc in storytelling, then you can't keep going back to that cash cow. Is really what it comes down to.
You can't go back to the well, man. Yeah. No, it's true. Didn't they? I don't know. I don't know a lot about current Fantastic Four, but I thought they got rid of those kids.
Probably. I don't know. For the same reason. Anytime you have kids, either they're going to stay kids forever or you have to show progression.
Well, I mean, now we're going to go tangential, but like even with Magic, who was a little girl, she died. It was Ileana Rasputin.
She died
of the Legacy virus in like the 90s. She was a little girl. And then she came back to life, but then she was an adult because, like, they went to the future to get her to bring her back. So, like, that's the, like, hope. Like, yeah. Hope from the X-Men starts as a little girl, but then Cable takes her away to a different time and raises her, and then she comes back a teenager. So you don't have to deal with that whole
because the
loophole of waiting, of watching age and time.
And not even that. You want them in their late teens, early 20s. You can do any story with them. They're hot and attractive. And
they still have moral ambiguity. Like, they don't, you know, they're finding out what's right and wrong versus they're ahead and they're jaded and bitter. And they're not Cyclops, you know.
But if you try and show that arc as they age, well, then that must mean that everybody else aged too. And now you're screwed.
It's tough. It's really tough.
I guess. It's the same reason nobody dies and stays dead.
Yeah. I don't know. Wolverine's dead.
Forever.
I'm so sad. I don't know. Maybe they brought a new Wolverine from a different universe.
How many covers was he on any given week?
Yeah, 1,000. Wolverine. They made the joke in that one. When they were divvying up the teams. It was
what he did for a day or a week in the life of Wolverine.
No, there was like Joss Whedon when he took over when he created Astonishing X-Men. They were like handing out the assignments, and Wolverine's. They're like, Wolverine, you're. He's like, ugh. He's like, really? He's like, I'm on like 47 teams already.
Right, but it was like they showed his week. What book was that?
I don't remember.
You know what I'm talking about at all? They went through like his week, and they showed him like Monday with West Coast Avengers and Tuesday with, you know, the X-Men. And it was kind of a play on the fact that he's in every book all the time.
He's just tired.
Yeah.
He's like Slurms McKenzie. Oh, I just want to lie down. Wizard Wham Wham Wazzle.
Might be the first time Wolverine and Slurms McKenzie have ever been drawn a parallel to.
If he didn't have that healing factor, his eyes would be all right. All right. So let's get into this story a little bit. Now, we're brought into this story with two brand new characters, which is, you know, it's hard because we're talking about like tropes of Spider-Man, and, you know, I mean, really one of the biggest Spider-Man tropes is new villain, new time, you know, new adventure.
Right.
And I feel like that these two characters that are brought in, while not being the most original, are like wholly fascinating. Like, Ezekiel is a character who is essentially an old Spider-Man who regrets his choices.
Right.
And Morlun is like a giant super bad guy.
Yeah, he's the Borg, or he's the enemy that won't stop.
Yeah. Well, when I was reading this, I was having flashbacks of my 90s days of Venom. He is the Venom of this of that era, because Venom was the guy who wanted revenge no matter what. Spider-Man couldn't combat him because he didn't have his spider sense against Venom because symbiote blocked it out. And, I mean, Venom was the unstoppable villain. So Morlun is, in this book, better than Venom, I guess. I don't want Marvel purists to get mad at me. I mean, Venom's pretty much an abomination these days. But that Morlun character is so intense. All he wants to do is kill Spider-Man. Like,
yeah, he's like, I mean, it reminds me of like World War Z, reading the book, where he's talking about how soldiers talk about the constant war, so I can't remember what the term is, but even soldiers still have to sleep and still have to, you know, do whatever, but Morlun doesn't. He's nonstop.
His only goal is to steal the life force from Spider-Man. Right. That's it. And it's because of his spider powers that he wants to kill him. And like in the beginning, he doesn't know who he's after. He doesn't know what's going on. He knows that in that city there is something for him to have.
Right. And it's not personal.
Nope.
You know?
I think he even says it at one point. You know, like he keeps making fun of Spider-Man for making a show of it, you know, and like he has complete disregard for people and, you know, they're nothing to him. He kills them because he knows it upsets him. And
right. That's how he draws him back in. So I'm trying to think. So we get we don't see him right away. I don't think until the end of the first book.
Yeah. No. That you don't meet him. Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, we just get the
Well, the first book is about basically it's rebranding Peter Parker. I mean, Peter Parker becomes a school teacher, which I think is one of the cooler moves for Spider-Man. I don't know how it fits in with his lifestyle. But it definitely
they do draw tough. They do at least make a note at one point where after the first whole clash and everything he at least calls in sick or whatever.
That kind of goes away after a while.
Yeah, it does.
I remember that. Like, I really like the idea of Peter Parker being a science teacher, but he was always not there. He's like in California, like doing other things.
Right, right. Well, and then the whole, you know, the school is so bad that this guy's like, yeah, I would like to teach. And they're like, great, you're hired.
The guy's quitting, right, as he walks in. He's like, you can take my job. And there's a school shooting, right? Like, that's a huge deal. I mean, that's like something that's...
I actually don't have that. I'm trying to remember. I know
Peter Parker goes there to apply after his initial meeting. And he noticed his spider sense goes off and he notices a kid coming in and he saves the school, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's pretty amazing that it's ahead of its time, Spider-Man.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, it's weird. There's stuff like that where, you know, you look back and you see it and you go, man, if that happened now or if they wrote that now,
it'd be a little tough.
Right.
I mean, this is like 5 months pre 9/11 too. So I mean,
well, and think of the country's state of mind at that point. I mean,
it's crazy.
Yeah, never would have thought or never would have imagined
that
the scale.
Something like that would happen. Yeah. He. I have in my notes that he goes. He's a first substitute teacher, and then they bring him from substitute to teacher as soon as the shooting happens. That's when the guy quits and hands him. He's like, fine, take over for me. I'm out of here.
Right.
Pulls the Danny Glover, I'm getting too old for this shit, and he takes off.
Yeah, I'm leafing through, you know, as we're doing this, I got my notes and everything, and then I'm trying to think if that's... Okay, I think a lot of that is in the second one. That's why I'm...
Oh, that all the school stuff?
Right.
Sorry. I just have, like, general... Right. I read, like, three issues.
Well, he starts as a sub, and then we meet our other main character besides Morlun, Ezekiel.
Yeah. It's cool. Like, doesn't he like Peter? Like, see him sitting on a building or something? He's like, "What? Huh? What? Huh?"
Right.
So, who are you? What's going on? He's like, "Hi, Peter." He's like, "Wait! How do you know who I am?"
Yeah, just out of nowhere, totally blindsided.
He's just like a weird little like I pictured like Ian Holm at that time. You know, like like just an old man.
That'd be a good cast.
Hanging out on a building with no shoes on. Right. He's not wearing any shoes. He's got a suit. Not wearing his shoes. Just chilling on the top of a building. He's like, "Hey, Peter, you got to get out of here, man." Right? He's like shooting him a little warning, like something bad's gonna happen. You gotta lay low for a while.
Yeah, and like you mentioned with the whole spider sense thing, doesn't set it off because you know he's got
the same kind of business.
Yeah, similar skill set.
And I think another thing that's interesting, right? And I don't know when it's introduced in the book, and I don't care, but where they talk about the totem of power. So when Ezekiel is talking to Peter Parker about what Morlun is after, he's after animal-powered superheroes or people, I guess.
Okay.
Superpowered people with animal powers. And he's saying that your source is very pure. And then he breaks down all the villains. The rhino, the vulture. He leaves out the Green Goblin, I think. But
well, right, because, he, yeah, it's...
All animal, like the scorpion.
Maybe even Kraven, who's animal, you know, like hunter-based.
All animal-based stuff is what he's laying at Peter Parker's feet, saying, this is all because of you. Like, this is all, like, the totemic power of animals being represented in people. And, I again, the whole history of Spider-Man, you don't think of... I've never thought about that stuff.
Right. Well, and what's funny, I'm sure... You know, all those authors coming up with those villains and this and that didn't necessarily
either. Yeah, there was no mandate to make them all. Yeah.
But it was something that Straczynski looked back and said, you know what? This is kind of cool. Great. Yeah. It's a great way. It reminds me of like film class where, you know, you examine a film and stuff and you go through and you talk about author's intention and this and that. But then there's a whole other layer of stuff that they didn't intend, but here are some themes that were just there.
Yeah,
you know, and whether they were planned or not, they're still there and they're still significant, and that's clearly one.
Yeah, it's and again, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I mean, this is why I love J. Michael Straczynski is just because he's got that element. Like I would never like that's what I like about comic books is I like going into a comic book, I like looking at the cover and seeing whatever's going on the cover, and then opening the book and being just completely, I don't want to say surprised because it's. I like getting into a story and not understanding where it's going. Like,
sure.
It's like the backbone of a great comic book story because it's always about the journey. It's always about the adventure. It's not ever really necessarily about the end fight or mm-hmm. I think that like Bendis does a great job with the journey and not so great of a job with the end fight. Like
right.
In all the big stories that he tells, I'm always involved. I'm always invested. But then I don't really care how it ends. Like it doesn't bother me. Either way, if it ends great or bad or whatever, it's the ride that I'm really enjoying. And I think Straczynski has a unique gift where he can give me both. He can give me
right.
a great ride and a fantastic ending. So I don't
know. I mean, he's a solid writer, and you know, there's a reason he's been doing it for as long as he has. And you know,
and what? Okay, so Ezekiel talks to Peter about his powers. He warns him of danger.
Right.
Then that danger being Morlun, and then they talk about like New York pizza or something like that. That's talk about how great New York pizza is.
Yeah, he says at one point, Peter says that he reminds him of Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so it's those human qualities within there where, you know, I don't know, a lesser writer, he would have just been a stereotype or a clone or Peter from the future or, you know, and instead it's obviously there's a very reminiscent spider power thing, but it's done in a way that's human.
Yeah.
A way that's believable.
Yeah, Ezekiel comes across as just a guy trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and yeah, there's a little subtle self-motivation from him. Like, he has a reason he wants Peter to hide, because he doesn't want to bring that attention to himself.
Sure.
But, I mean, by the end of this story, Ezekiel's front and center. He wants to be part of Spider-Man's life. And so they, with I found my notes where they're talking about the totemic guys.
Okay.
And they're saying that the villains are the pretenders. So
okay,
Peter's
right,
the real deal, and these guys are all pretenders, and they're drawn to him. And then Ezekiel talks about his powers, right? He goes to, like, some temple in South America.
Oh, I love that. They don't... again, it would have been really easy to have half an issue or a whole issue... You know, just start from that and go through that story, but they don't. It's just like little flashbacks, just little pictures, and you get enough of it.
Well, they get into it a little more too once you get further down the story. Like
right.
So, after outside of the story arc, which I mean is a great like one and done. Like mm-hmm. you don't really have to read anything else to complete this story, but you read it because it's good.
Right.
But this is like a great solid 6-issue story arc, beginning to end. You get everything you want out of it with just a little teaser at the end. And afterwards, Ezekiel does make his way back.
Right, there's more of them. Sure.
And you learn a little more about both of them heading toward the end game, I guess. But, you know, and then Morlun's back now. I don't know. I read some of that Edge of the Spider-Verse, and it just takes every... I don't like to really go on record as talking badly about something going on. But I just feel like they've taken everything that this that makes this great and made it not great. A good example, I would say, would be like when Grant Morrison left the X-Men, the new X-Men.
The new X-Men.
And then Chuck Austin took over right afterwards. And it was some of like the biggest, like stupidest garbage stories I'd ever read in comic books. I'm like, you can't go from like the greatest to the worst. You have to transition me down. Don't go from first gear to fourth gear. I need to go to second gear. I need to go to third gear.
It's just unfortunate. It's weird how often that happens, or when that happens. How did the Quesadas of the world and other, how did they not see that?
How is this not picked up on? But to be fair, people seem to like new Spider-Man.
Right.
I can't get behind it. I've read a lot of it, more than I've read of anything else that I don't like.
did those people also like this run, though?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I don't know.
And if that's true, then I guess I'm a little more forgiving than maybe it's just us or something. You know what I mean? But I find it hard to believe that you would really be that into one and then another one. It's so, it's like watching the Nolan Batmans and watching the 1966 Batmans. It's so.
But it'd be like if you got Nolan first.
Right.
And then immediately after, like, there was a fourth Batman movie that was 1966 style. It'd be like if you watched the first Batman movie with Michael Keaton, the second Batman movie with Michael Keaton, three Christopher Nolan movies, and then two Joel Schumacher movies. you got pretty good, great.
Maybe there's people out there that just will buy it and like it no matter what. But
yeah, I don't know.
I'm not that guy.
Yeah, me neither. So we get into Moreland. We start to learn a little bit about him. He's got his little sidekick, right?
Dex.
They pull out like a little German eagle fighter, right? He's got like a little eagle on his chest, and
he's in the bottom of a like a tanker or like a, I don't know, a big,
like a cargo ship.
Ship, yeah, coming over. So that's how Moreland's traveling over here.
Oh, he don't fly.
Which ironically, he's kind of a vampire.
Yeah, kind of. I tried to describe him as a living vampire, and then I'm like, no, that's Morbius.
Well, I mean, honestly, living vampire. Yeah. It's not too far off. But yeah, so they use this guy, a nobody, German, quote unquote, I guess, superhero, just to
well,
show
he's speaking in German, right?
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, you've never heard. Has this guy ever been in anywhere?
He
is
a guy who is here to die.
Right. it's not like Captain Britain or what's his name?
No, it's Captain Britain. Yeah. He gets his power from the British Isles. Come
sure.
on.
Right. Like, if at least it was some established hero. No,
he's a nobody.
Yeah.
He's human garbage.
Right. He's a plot point or a plot device.
He's the equivalent of like a McDonald's snack wrap.
You think he's fulfilling at the time, but one issue later, you're hungry again.
He's going to have to go after some spider-powered fellow.
And that's where we get into the whole. I know, we're trying to avoid the sequential storytelling or whatever, but yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah.
It's important.
Sure. Well, that's where we get into the whole... all the key characters are laid out in that first one. Straczynski sets us up where we get where Peter's at in his life right now. Ezekiel showing up, and then we see Moreland. He still hasn't met Peter yet,
but he's there. He's
now in New York. And
Dex like bribes somebody to get them to not get searched by customs. Like
he's not a sidekick. He's not even a sidekick.
He's a manservant.
Yeah, right. yeah,
he clearly does not enjoy his time there with Moreland.
No, he's reluctant to that, but he's a victim, and he's. He's going to do what he's told because otherwise Moreland will torture him or whatever.
So, yeah, we learn that after this that Ezekiel really, he comes to donate money to Peter's school, right? He finds out where he works. He donates $100,000. Mm-hmm. And he kind of is saying, they can do without you for a little while.
Like, that's what I was going to say, that not only is Ezekiel kind of Spider-Man from the future or something like that. But he's also representative of like what he could have done. Because Peter Parker forever is always the underdog, always the guy.
Ezekiel at some point says, like, you didn't use this to your advantage. Right, like, hello, I'm a billionaire. I make money, man.
Yeah, that's another thing. Where, you know, he calls him out and he questions just the stuff that we've all read for 40 years.
Yeah. You know? Or, what are you doing, Peter?
I'm not quite that old, but you know what I mean.
But what we know, the history of Spider-Man is always the underdog. And Peter basically says he learned with great power comes great responsibility. But Ezekiel asks my favorite question, and then what?
Yeah.
What about it? Like, so you do that, and then what happens after that?
Right.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So he takes him into his area. He shows him that he's got a special safe room for him.
Yeah. Ezekiel's whole plan is bad dude's coming, so what we're going to do is hide and wait for him to go away.
He said, you stay in this room, Morlun will leave. You never have to worry about it again, which I want to sidebar real quick. I swear to God, I read a book recently where there was a girl who had been trapped in one of these safe rooms from Ezekiel the entire time, quote unquote, who came out and in one issue went from being someone we had never met before and someone who was just trapped in a thing to a brand new superhero with a name and a costume trying to make out with Peter Parker. It's like 22 pages of comic books had us find it, open it, meet someone new, give them a costume, and make them a love interest.
It's efficient. I guess that's the positive spin.
I swear to God. I was like, what?
So that's part of the new Amazing
that's
Spider-Man?
Part of, this is like the lead up to the Edge of the Spider-Verse thing that's going on with Ezekiel, with Morlun and his family. But
Those two, they were out of it for a long time, right? After all this, it was all back to fighting the Vulture and crazy stuff.
There was, after the Straczynski run, Straczynski run brought us up into and through the Civil War, and that's when it ended because, spoiler alert, Tony Stark inadvertently hired Bullseye to kill Spider-Man because he was making him look bad in the Civil War stuff.
Oh, it's after he decided, because Peter was his right-hand man. He was. Like, hey, this is great. I'm going to hang out with Tony.
And then he quit because he decided it was doing bad things for people. Tony Stark was mad, so he hired Bullseye to kill him. Bullseye took the shot from, like, outside of the, so, like, I think Tony Stark gave him the range of what his spider sense could pick up. He went outside of that range, shot. Peter Parker heard it, like, felt it. As it was coming in, moved, and Aunt May got shot. And whoops. So that was the end of the Civil War tie-in, and then we got the One More Day, and then it brought us to a brand new day.
Yeah, I guess I blanked all that out. Yeah, I read One More Day, was kind of pissed the whole time, but at least like I had like an inkling of hope. And that was completely shattered.
Well,
brand new
not
day.
To talk too much about books that aren't this one, but isn't Aunt May like 100 years old? Like,
that's fine. I don't care about. I feel like again, I like progression.
I feel like if she ate a bullet, she lived a pretty good life,
right?
That's what
fine.
I'm saying.
Fine.
I'm not trying to be uncompassionate toward Aunt May. I'm just saying that if she dies in the line of fire. What is there to do other than just let her go?
Well, they'll never do that.
Yeah. I just feel like it's tough. It's a tough move. It's a tough move.
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with that. I don't know what's wrong with allowing a story to progress.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's like lack of faith that your writers and creative team can come up with something else.
Even if you do, though, I feel like there's a lot of room in comic books to undo it at some point. So even if you have to make a hard choice, you can wait the prerequisite, 3 to 10 years.
But that's the problem. They always do. I mean, the two untouchables, right? Gwen Stacy and Bucky.
Bucky. But I love what they did with Bucky. Right. Are you kidding me?
And that's Brubaker, right?
Who did all that? Brubaker wanted to bring back Bucky.
Yeah, that was really well done.
He had a great plot.
But how long was he gone?
Yeah, forever.
30 years.
He was gone since World War II.
Yeah.
I mean, when they brought back Captain America into the Avengers, Bucky wasn't a part of any of that. because he had already passed. He had already gone outside of his scope.
Yeah,
it was 25 years after World War II. Bucky wasn't going to be there. So
yeah, so I mean that one was well done, but now there's like, you know, nothing. I mean, Jason Todd, you can't name one.
Yeah, you're right. Gwen Stacy's still dead, sort of. They have.
I thought she came back and was like, now they have Spider Gwen,
but I think that's not actually Gwen Stacy. I'm just saying it's not Gwen Stacy.
My face is not translating well on podcast. But.
It's not Gwen Stacy. So there's a limited amount of space you can work with not actually being. I mean, I don't know. I haven't read any of this stuff, so I don't know what it is or what it isn't. But I know that in the Ultimate Spider-Man run, Gwen Stacy died and was replaced by kind of like a Carnage clone.
Okay.
And they just went on with their lives.
Because I know that was a big thing in the early Ultimate Spider-Man, that they were following the whole regular story, and that was the first big change where she didn't die.
Yeah. Well, she did die, and they brought her back. It wasn't her. It wasn't Gwen Stacy. It was a clone of Gwen Stacy from, like, the symbiote.
In Ultimate. I'm talking like, okay, but you're saying way later.
Yeah, way later. Yeah.
Right. But the whole bridge thing with the Green Goblin, that was like issue 9 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. She did not die.
She did not die.
Yeah. And then her and Peter, like, had a relationship.
Right.
Much to Mary Jane's dislike.
So, yeah. It's probably not what you guys want to hear from a guy brought in to help with this podcast. But I have a question since we're doing this. Where's Mary Jane right now?
They
dismantle all that.
They're separated before. Oh, you mean outside of this?
Yeah, like Pat, like right now, 2015.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't really know. I remember in the book that they whispered in her, like she asked for something specific when they dissolved their relationship with Mephisto.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's to remember everything as it was. Like,
okay.
So Peter would have no knowledge of it, but she would.
But they haven't gone back to that? They haven't?
There's a couple of times they teased it.
Okay.
But then it didn't happen, and then
just keeping that there for when they run out of
Peter Parker had a slew of weird girlfriends, and then he died because Doc Ock took over his body. And then Doc Ock had a weird girlfriend as Peter Parker. And then Peter Parker came back, and I don't really understand what happened with that relationship. For what this book does to Peter Parker, and I guess this is like I didn't want to make it like a this versus that, but
I don't either deep down, but you can't help it.
Yeah, this takes Peter at his humblest. Like it brings Peter down to, I mean, it makes him like a public school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
No more Daily Herald. No more Google Daily Bugle.
Find out where we're at.
And it makes his life different. He's struggling with separation from Mary Jane. Mary Jane is living in California.
Right.
They are possibly going to be divorced. He's at a low point, and he's working through his life, and he's doing his Spider-Man thing. He joins the Avengers. Mm-hmm. He's doing different things for himself on a smaller scale, I guess, where Peter Parker, in the height of the late Amazing Spider-Man, then Superior Spider-Man, is like working as a scientist at a lab, and he's getting money from patents that he earned, like web fluid and things like that. And he's got cash, and he opens his own lab, and like Doc Ock as Peter Parker, like seriously, like takes over like Rikers Island prison and turns that into his own laboratory. I don't know. I read it all. It's very confusing.
I think Dan Slott's favorite movie is Spider-Man 3.
Just, you know what this movie needs? More villains. I guess the one thing I really, really, really don't understand is that they did. I mean, the Peter Parker Doc Ock thing was interesting. I want to say that outright.
Sure.
So it was Doc Ock was dying, and he had been dying almost the entire run of Dan Slott's Amazing Spider-Man. And there was a series of things that were supposed to be happening where Doc Ock was imprinting himself on Peter Parker.
Gross.
This was not as clear as I would have liked it to be. I mean, and I will say that I read it after knowing. So I'm always like 2 or 3 years behind the current Spider-Man schedule. Because I have a hard time paying money for things that I don't necessarily like. But I do. I end up buying them and reading them. And
right.
I think the hardest part for me about that whole storyline is that it just kind of happens. Like, it's very strange. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then there's a point where Peter Parker is in Doc Ock's body. Like, Peter Parker's consciousness is in Doc Ock's dying body. And Doc Ock is in Spider-Man's body. But part of Spider-Man is still in the body. Like,
right. His consciousness is there witnessing the atrocity.
And the way it was sold to me was like that he is like Obi-Wan to Luke Skywalker. Like, he's there trying to help Doc Ock, but Doc Ock doesn't know. And I'm... I don't know. It's
is that how Straczynski felt reading the slot stuff afterward?
I hope so. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but for God's sakes, it's the opposite of this.
I know.
And like, I'm not saying the ideas are bad. I'm saying the execution is bad.
And I would agree with you.
It's too much. There's so much going on, and it's not being properly conveyed. Like, it's a lot of like, oh, this is happening. Oh, here's this. Oh, hi, I'm a new villain. I'm gonna shoot you. You know, like, just like, ha ha ha. Like, quick. And then like, we're supposed to enjoy it and follow the whole thing. Like, Eddie Brock was a homeless guy at some dumb homeless shelter, and he became an anti-Venom. So he no longer had the symbiote. So now he's a white Venom instead of a black Venom. It doesn't make any sense. It happens. He had cancer and he was going to die, but then he didn't because he had this new thing. And it's just all this weird stuff that seems nonsensical. It seems like their stories could have been told without any of that. Like, you didn't need any. You don't need to go back to the well. And then there's new villains being invented, like page after page, and then characters are being brought back from the dead aimlessly. Because of this, the signature with the devil is revealing people, and like Flash Thompson all of a sudden has no legs. And
Flash Thompson, what the hell is Flash Thompson still doing around?
Flash Thompson is Venom now.
This is what I'm saying. Why?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so okay, that was like a good 10 minutes on other stuff.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay. Let's talk a little bit more without bogging you down with the blow by blow. So, I mean, really, this whole book is just about the fight between Peter and Moreland.
And it gets going really quickly.
Yeah, right at the... I forgot how fast the fight starts. I mean, it's like issue 3. I'm like, whoa, this shit's going down.
Yeah.
It's happening right now.
Yeah, one is the setup, just kind of, hey, here's the main players. Two is...
You should probably hide.
Well, yeah, and the humanization. This is a lot of the substitute stuff, and I have it written here. I have Gun at School 2000.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously that's... That's pretty crazy. But then, once the third issue hits, issue 32, it is...
It's on.
Yeah, it's nonstop. And he says that... what is it? Yeah, Moreland hits him, and he's been hit by the Hulk, and he's been hit by Thor, and this beats that.
Yep.
So that kind of gives it, it's that power with a dude who doesn't rest, doesn't have to rest, doesn't care about lives.
And they really beat you over the head with that. I mean, they're... Peter Parker kind of gets away for a minute, and he's like, hey, Zeke, you got that room still? And he's like, dude, he drew blood. He knows where you are all the time now.
Right.
There's nothing you can do to stop this.
That room will not hold him away. It would have prevented him from finding you, but it won't hold him off.
But now that you've made contact with him, he knows where you are all the time.
Right.
And what, he went to like burn down an apartment building or something to lure him out?
Sorry, I'm going through... He was beat. He tried to fight him head on. He couldn't do it. He had to run away. And as he's resting, he can hear chaos going on. And he's burning an apartment building. He's killing bystanders in their cars or whatever. Like, he's just...
There's a great double page spread in the middle of like issue 4 where they're just fighting and fighting and fighting, and it's just like this blob together blur of them just punching each other nonstop. And Moreland, he kind of gives him like a, okay, now that you've had your fun, you ready to die? And Peter Parker's spider sense is hitting him like crazy. They're fighting nonstop, hurting each other. Moreland he grabs some girl and tries to drain her health because he himself is getting a little tired, I guess. And Pete's not having it. They fight so hard, and then he finds an opportunity to skip away. And from that point on, Moreland catches up, starts fighting again, blows up a diner. I mean, this is madness.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just nonstop. It's one of the things that, yeah, what a great spread by Romita.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that one. It's just awesome. There's literally like, I don't know, 12 different.
Yeah, and there's no division or anything. It's just all together fighting. It's so cool to look at. And that's at that point, after this fight, is when Peter is trying to get Ezekiel to hide him. Ezekiel's like, tough titties, man. You got to get out there. It's time for you to die.
I wish that was a quote.
But I think what I like the most is that Peter is just done. Like, he is admittedly exhausted, tired, not willing. Like, he's just like, I can't. And
you see that arc in there, too, where he, you know, at first he treats it like a normal villain.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this guy sucks. This guy's tough. As soon as I figure him out, I'll take him down. Whatever. Yeah.
He's a smart kid.
Right.
He invented web shooters.
Eventually he just gives into it. You know, and he says, all right, if it's going to go down like this, fine. It's going to go down like this. But
he's not going to stop.
Yeah.
And they fight. And right when you think it's over, Zeke shows up. He gives Peter a little bit of a reprieve because they go at it together.
That was the one thing. Well, even before that, though, that with the whole diner thing, there was one, like, you know, to pick apart a couple things. There's one part where he does leave him alone and gives him a rest. And I get it from a storytelling aspect. You have to take a breath. You have to have.
I mean, it's like seconds.
Well, when he blows up the place, Moreland has no clothes on.
No, and that gives Peter time to go find Ezekiel.
So and also Dex is right there, which they've been fighting all over the city, and all of a sudden Dex is just there.
You're called my master.
Yeah, so there's a couple little things where, you know, even the great Straczynski takes some liberties. But so they do that, and he gives him a break, which, granted, isn't too long, but in the earlier scene, and maybe he's tired, maybe you can justify it some way, but in the earlier scene when Peter ran away, first thing he did was start killing civilians and bring them right back.
Yep.
He doesn't do it here.
Yeah.
You know, which, again, I think...
Maybe he's perplexed a little
bit. I think
you
need as a, you know,
they
as a
to
reader...
get to the next issue, I mean.
Right.
But, I mean, issues like, what, 4, 5, and 6 are all fights. I mean, it's like... The whole thing goes down. I think I stopped taking notes after issue 4.
They're the quickest reads.
It's fighting. They're only fighting.
I'm looking. Yeah. 32, 33, and 34, I have about 6 notes each.
Well, from the fight, though, Ezekiel gets beaten up so bad, and he gets drained of his energy and dumped into the ocean. But Peter hits Marlon so hard that he draws blood.
It's and like that moment in Rocky IV.
he sees the floorboard with blood on it, cracks it, grabs it, and runs away as fast as he can.
We get that Batman moment, right?
Yep.
Where instead of being just the fighter and all that, he's like, okay, I'm going to use my brain now.
Yep. And then he looks at the DNA and he says it's insane. It's got every type of animal and DNA he's ever seen. Insects, humans, birds. And it's the purest forms of all of them in there. Which leads to, you know, lends to Ezekiel needing to find the purest form of the spider because this is what he needs to live. Peter Parker suits back up and he decides to make himself not pure, which is this is what I'm talking about. You got this story, it's going on, you don't know where it's going. Instead of going to the typical fight, you got Peter Parker going to a nuclear facility and injecting himself with radiation to make himself too unpure for Moreland to steal his energy.
Right.
And in return, it gives him the strength to just annihilate Moreland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the beginning of this book, I'm like, yeah, I probably am with him injecting himself with radioactivity. You know? No. No way. So, yeah, he causes everyone to leave. He webs up all the cameras.
Yeah, which, again... You know, it's one of those moments where you just kind of suspend disbelief.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, I guess, you know, that's fine. It's going to be cool.
It's pre-9/11. Nuclear facilities are like playgrounds. Anyone can come and go.
and all like, so in all the fighting, there are a couple moments. And I'm looking through it there. We get where he calls in. So it's still grounded in reality a little bit. He calls in to substitute or that he's going to be sick at work. He tries calling Mary Jane.
Oh yeah,
and he gets a message. And he leaves a message, which part of me thought was kind of a cop-out on Straczynski because then he doesn't have to have that conversation.
Yeah.
But it's still there and it's still cool. Yeah. And then
he
didn't
even have to do it. Dan Slott wouldn't have done it. Sorry.
And then he also calls Aunt May.
Yep.
You know, and it, I mean, how often do you ever see that? He's never fighting Green Goblin and going, you know what? Yeah.
I mean, that's real. And that is a really cool touch. And you know it's not because he's Spider-Man.
Right.
But it's still really cool. Yeah. I think the biggest cop-out, as we talked about before we started recording, is through the fight with Moreland, where Moreland is weakened, Dex shoots him.
Yes.
Like, so Spider-Man doesn't have to take that life. You know, Spider-Man doesn't
end
Moreland's reign.
Well, because otherwise, yeah, without the character of Dex, which, and I don't know, I guess it's a credit to Straczynski, because, you know, so it's a trope that's been done so many times where there's that guy who's the, again, not the sidekick, but just the
disgruntled manservant.
Right, yeah, exactly. And he's just there, and okay, it's been done, and fine, it makes sense. But you see it as a real device at the end. It allows Peter to not have to make the tough choice, which he says.
Yeah, he's struggling with it.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what he's going to do at that point. And Dex just kind of walks in and bang. And he says, like, he gives him, like, the diplomatic immunity, you know, like, I quit. And he shoots him. And Moreland, at this point, it looks like a little bit of a weird lizard man.
Yep.
And then he kind of, like, melts into the ground, which, you know what? Now I want to go back and read the other where they bring Moreland back.
This is what I was asking.
I had a huge plan of, I sold all my individual issues of Spider-Man. I wanted to go back and buy all the trades, and I think I have, like, glaring gaps in my collection. I have, like, 1 through 4, and then I have, like, 6, and then I have, like, 9. And I'm like, oh, I need to get all these trades. I need to buy all these trades so I can read this all in one sitting. But this is not the biggest thing that happens in this book. After he's defeated, Peter Parker, who has arguably come off of one of the most difficult fights of his entire life, goes all the way home. Well, first he stops by Ezekiel's office, and the whole place is cleared out, and he doesn't know what's going on, and he sees all the little spider footprints on the windows. He goes home, passes right out.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Aunt May shows up because he called her. And finds his beat-up Spider-Man costume.
Which, again, for, what, 40 years they were stringing that thing along?
I know.
And he finally says, that's dumb. Let's just, I know. How the hell would she not know?
Exactly.
And, you know? And, yeah, that's the final page. No words except end at the bottom.
And she's just holding the destroyed thing, and Peter's just covered in bandages. And
yeah,
he's all
swollen.
Beat to death. Yeah. It's like 2:30 in the afternoon, right? He's been sleeping forever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some things in here that they had never really done before. And I enjoyed it. It's, like, easily one of my favorite Spider-Man stories to date.
It's such a nonstop, quick read. It's just so good beginning to end. And, like I said, you know, not only does it have all the action and the cool superhero-y stuff, it's got the weight of impending doom. This is a guy, I don't know, comes out of nowhere, whatever. But it's at least believably done in a superhero universe.
He goes from being someone Spider-Man's literally never heard of before to someone who could probably end his life. I mean,
well, it makes him question everything. Yeah. He says, you know, in the end, would I have done it? I don't know, but I probably would have. Basically, yeah. is what he says. If Dex didn't do it for me. You know, and so again, it's cool. It allows you to have that glimpse into the character without him actually crossing that line.
And they didn't do like the obligatory Peter waits for the officials, the officers to arrive so Dex could go to jail. Like, Dex just leaves.
Well, he chases him down.
Yeah.
He chases him down afterward, and he basically lets him go.
Yep. He does not turn him in. He does not say, he gives him a little bit of a, what the hell are you doing? But
yeah, and even that is cool. He's like a big old spider. He's got a big web ready to catch him. And Dex's line is, he hurt me. He hurt me a lot. And he just says, get out. Never come back or I will hurt you 1,000 times worse than he ever did.
So cool.
Which, whatever. Let him go.
It's a great book, man. Thanks for doing this with me.
Of course, man. Yeah. Check it out, everybody, if you haven't.
Now, I did have a couple of questions. I think we answered some of them, so My question number one is, why is this story important? But I think we got it. I think we nailed it from every angle why it's important. It's got great storytelling arc. It's got comic book tropes like huge fights, but it still falls inside of a great story.
Right.
Like, it's got everything a comic book needs and more.
Yeah. Within those big splody moments.
Yeah, there's words in there that make you think about Spider-Man. Right. Like, it's not just like 9 pages of beatdown.
Even at the end, they throw in a bathroom joke. Yeah. About how this whole time he hasn't gone to the bathroom, and
that's stuff you never think about,
right? And at least they, he even just gives a little wink and a nod to stuff like that, so
yeah. Which is amazing. So that's why it's important, because it talks about Spider-Man going to the bathroom. I said this earlier, but my question to you is Moreland the best Spidey villain since Venom?
I'm trying to think of who else. I mean, Carnage was.
Yeah, but Carnage was like. He's like 2D Venom.
I'm just saying who else would be in there.
Venom was Eddie Brock was like a dipshit reporter who hated Spider-Man for ruining, or hated Peter Parker for ruining his life, because Peter Parker proved evidence against him.
He's always got, I guess his villains typically aren't, I don't know, the typical one, Rhino and this and that, like the physically strong, they either fall on the physically strong
or the strong.
No, or the personally demeaning his character, or like hurting Peter Parker,
yeah.
Like J. Jonah Jameson, or that type of thing.
Well, but Venom was a double-edged front, because he knew his secret identity,
right?
And he was stronger than him, and he had edge over the spider sense.
I'm not arguing. You put me on the con side of the argument, so I'm trying to think of another alternative, like who else could qualify? Who would be in the conversation?
Well, I'm saying I don't think anyone could be in the conversation. Norman Osborn is tricky, because I feel like they change him.
He's another one that died
too
and
much.
Came back and
yeah, they change him so much where he is a villain, or he's a reformed lunatic that people don't know he was the Green Goblin. Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes
that
on.
That whole Iron Patriot thing, while being so awesome, was so stupid.
It was really confusing.
Who in the world would allow a psychopath to...
Well, but I think inside of that story's context, it was still not proven that he was Green Goblin. But he still was. Like, it's like weirdest...
That one, I punched my ticket. Okay, I go along with the ride. And it was cool.
It was
a good
book.
Ride.
Yeah, it
but
was a great book.
You have to, if you're going to go on that ride, you have to just allow the other stuff to, okay, fine. Yeah. We'll go on the ride.
Fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
All right. So I say that he is the best villain since Venom. I mean, I think Venom was a big deal. I think when Venom came out, it was, it was a long time coming. There's a lot of, this was kind of out of nowhere, Marlon, but Venom was... The symbiote came from the Secret Wars, where Spider-Man got on another planet.
I did like the origin better. I mean, Eddie Brock is kind of a goof, but even that, I like that it's just a guy.
Yeah.
It wasn't like some alien dude who came back to find his symbiote.
Well, that's what makes Carnage so not interesting, because Carnage was, Eddie Brock was in jail.
Okay.
And a part of the symbiote, which, why on earth is he in jail with a symbiote on, fell off, like molted, and... Carnage got it.
It's hot in prison.
Or what's his name? Cletus Kasady got it.
Right.
And he was a convicted murderer, like a serial killer. And so, like, Carnage was just like, I'm bigger, better, and I'll kill everyone. Yeah. And again, it's inside of the confines of how do you stop this crazy murderer without just killing him? Mm-hmm. Like, he's clearly a hellbent lunatic. You just can't let him go. And then, like, I think Carnage died like 4 times. I don't know. I remember specifically that there was a comic book where the Sentry ripped him in half in space.
Nice.
And I don't know how he came back from that, but he did.
Yeah, the one thing, I mean, I just wonder, even as a writing exercise or something like that, like, what's his name? Not Chris Carter, Vince Gilligan. Right?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
From Breaking Bad? Yeah. He's talking about how they would kind of paint themselves into a corner on purpose and see what they could come up with.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And obviously great storytelling came out of it. So I wonder, like, if you said, okay, Straczynski, no Dex, how does this end?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds interesting to me. And it's because, like, to your point, Moreland is such a great villain and such a, that unstoppable force, what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Kill him.
Yeah.
Kill him dead.
Have Cap show up and
the
kill
Punisher
him.
Punisher will just swing
yeah,
in and
there
shoot
you
him.
Go. See?
Daredevil. We had a team up. That's still one of my favorite. That's like one of the Garth Ennis Punisher books where like he's like fighting somebody on a rooftop and Spider-Man shows up and gets knocked out and Punisher just holds him up and uses him to block all the hits. And then he shoots the guy dead and then Peter Parker like wakes up. He's like, what happened? He's like, we had a team up. We won. See you later.
Awesome.
What are some other great Spider-Man stories? That's my third question. I think we talked about it a little bit.
Yeah,
we talked
obviously about a lot the continuation of this stuff.
Not so great Spider-Man stories. I think Spider-Man Reign is a really great story. That's the one that's in the future.
Oh.
It's that Keir Andrews book.
I'm going to sound like a horrible white guy. It's a Hispanic Spider-Man, right? Isn't that the dude? 2044, what's his name? Or
it's Peter Parker. Well, Spider-Man Reign.
Who am I
Oh, you're talking about 2099. Yeah. What's his name? Miguel? Yeah. No, that's okay.
I'm not going to guess because
he's part of continuity now because in the Dan Slott book, Doc Ock went to the future and
right.
I'm
just trying to think of Spider-Man
it
arcs.
Seems like
last...
Miguel O'Hare. I mean, I think.
Sure. You got to keep it diverse.
Spanish Irish. That's what the future's like, guys.
Yeah. What else? Again, the ultimate stuff.
Ultimate stuff.
I mean,
really
the
good.
Bend, he took his time with all of that, which was...
It was really cultivated, and in using a lot of the same people, characters, creatures, vastly different. I mean, the Venom stuff is way different. Vulture is way different. Doc Ock working for Norman Osborn. I mean, they use these in the movies, right? I mean, even in the cartoons afterwards, a lot of that stuff was stemmed from all the Ultimate Spider-Man things that were going on. I feel like Ultimate Spider-Man 1-7 was a pretty great story arc, and I don't understand why people making movies would not just do that movie. Like, it's genius.
Yeah, but they never do.
It's like Norman Osborn figures out that Peter Parker Spider-Man got his powers, and then tries to replicate that and becomes the Green Goblin. How hard is that?
Yeah,
it's not hard.
it makes perfect sense. It makes too much sense.
The weapons contracts and like, I want to watch a movie where the same as when I read this book, this Spider-Man book we're talking about. I want to watch a superhero movie, and I want to not only enjoy the ride, but be surprised that I'm really liking the end.
I'm thinking about, and I think it comes down to writing credits. I think if you take source material and translate it to film or show or whatever, nobody else gets paid.
But if I
take this, do a bunch of coke, and then say, hey, man, I got this great idea. Check this out. Now it's going to be a woman.
I got an idea. Instead of Electro just being a guy who is a criminal who gets superpowers, we'll make him a guy who works for Oscorp.
Right.
No.
Now pay me.
Yeah, wrong. You don't want that.
This is really good. If I do it 2 times more ridiculous, it's got to be better, right?
I think one of the biggest mistakes in superhero movies now is they try to have us sympathize with the villains.
And yeah.
Who cares?
Well,
why do they have to be good people to be terrible people? They can just be terrible people.
Sure, sometimes.
I don't want to see why they were good people. And I want to say First Class is a little different because we're meeting them at the beginning of their journey. Mm-hmm. But a movie like Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is pure garbage, is Electro being a sympathetic character in the beginning, becoming a crazy villain who wants to kill everyone for like almost no reason other than the fact that he thinks Spider-Man's not his friend. And that has to be one of the stupidest motivations to be a supervillain I've ever heard of.
Well, so I think it's not that idea. It's just it was poured out or carried out poorly.
Well, and I think what you're saying, though, with just taking an idea and making it into a script, it's not that no one gets paid. I really feel like that there's people who are producers who are like, I want to see them fight over a giant electrical facility. Like, why? Why? Why do you want to see that? It doesn't matter. I think 3D is one of the worst things that's happened to the film industry because
is it still going on?
Oh, it's You watch a movie in 2D and you'll figure it out real fast. You're like, this movie's really boring. Oh, wait, there's a bunch of scenes of them just running around and jumping through stuff. They take what used to be transitional stuff where like you'd be like, let's go. And then the superheroes would be fighting or like at the place they're going to be. And they like show them for 15 minutes, fly to the spot that they're going to get to. And you're like, who cares? This is boring. This, right. Like, it's only for people who are paying to see it in 3D. And that is people not at home, right? I mean, I want to say I'm a huge lover of movies. I love comic books. I don't choose the 3D option at all. I don't want to see a movie in 3D. And I don't own anything at my house to watch a movie in 3D at my house. I just want to watch a movie.
Right.
I think it ruined the Hobbit movie like because it was like in a weird...
Oh, it was a weird frame rate.
Yeah,
right?
It was so distracting that I watched that movie in 3D and I'm like, I will not watch the rest of these movies in 3D because I cannot pay attention to the movie because I'm so distracted by the way
3D
it looks.
Was a different frame rate or yes. all of it?
No, just the 3D. Was just the 3D version was a different frame rate and it was so distracting that I couldn't pay attention to the movie.
Okay, so. I knew about the frame rate thing, but I didn't know it was just a 3D thing, but...
So yeah, okay.
And
so
that has to do with Ezekiel.
That has to do with the great Spider-Man stories. What are some other JMS works that are pretty good? We talked about some earlier. I have some on deck that I forgot about.
There was supposed to be a Rising Stars movie, or three,
or
of
a
them.
TV show, or something.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know all that stuff.
I mean, maybe Heroes came out and screwed it up.
I don't know if he had a bad deal over at Top Cow.
Okay,
but I feel like something went down with rights. I feel like that's that the core of all the things that happened negatively to those stories are because of money and rights. So I don't know.
Yeah, but I remember when all that was going on, it was more than
like
wouldn't
Midnight
this be
Suns
cool?
And
oh yeah.
Well, I think the 4400
Midnight Nation.
Midnight Nation. Sorry, Midnight Suns. That's that garbage Marvel stuff. When Rising Stars came out, they had that 4400 show. Remember that? Yeah.
Yep, I watched the whole thing.
That was very Rising Stars.
Yes.
I mean,
which is Heroes. Same kind of thing.
But Heroes wasn't like a
Heroes just
shared,
happened a lot quicker.
Shared power kind of situation.
Yeah.
Where
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the coolest parts about Rising Stars is that like when somebody died, everyone's power levels went up.
Yep.
So interesting.
It was great. Maybe we'll do that next.
Rising Stars? Oh, man, I would love to read those books again. But you know what? To be fair... It takes like 8 times longer to read something like that than it does something like this.
Yeah.
Same writer, but it's so dense.
Well, all the poet stuff. Well, it's got three distinct acts, though.
Yeah, and well, the distinct acts have three distinct qualities.
Yeah. That either raise or lower. We'll leave that
on people
undiscussed.
Who will read them and listen to the stories. So... That's a great one. I loved, there's some of the later stuff, like, I really, really loved his Squadron Supreme.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that stuff was so cool.
Yeah.
It was such an interesting, the Max stuff was great. I love anything under that Marvel Max icon, which I don't really think they care about that much anymore. Mm-hmm. But that Punisher Alias was under Marvel Max.
Right.
It was called, what, Supreme Power at that point. They changed it later to Squadron Supreme, but.
Did you ever watch Babylon 5?
No, I've never watched it.
Me either.
And my parents 100% loved it, which I'm sorry to say is something that I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I watched like 8 minutes of an episode like when I was like 18, and I was like, I don't
know. The other problem, I know if I won't bring myself to do it because even though the story and the writing might be great, the film quality of 1992 or whatever.
It was like 97, 98.
Okay.
I mean,
but I know it's
poor
just
quality.
Gonna,
yeah. Well, film quality, special effects quality.
Right, that's what I mean. It's just, yeah. I've never watched Next Generation.
And yeah, well, I watched it and it's not good.
So. Well, and I know at least the first couple seasons aren't or whatever, but like, I don't know, just nerd nostalgia. I want to, but I can't bring myself
it's
to
so boring.
It.
I mean, this is why I like Star Wars
but it's
over
the same
Star Trek.
Era, right? I mean, there were.
No, Babylon 5 is post Next Generation.
But not, what, by 7 years?
Not. By 2 years, man.
Oh, okay. Exactly. So,
I don't know. We'll get some exact dates on this. But Babylon 5 was out when I lived with my mother and father, and I only lived with my mother and father until I was about 22.
So. That's about as good as most of us. Especially anybody listening to this.
So I would walk by, and they'd always be watching it, because my mother and father recorded everything on VHS, and they had
awesome.
They have every episode of Doctor Who that ever aired on PBS on a VHS tape in their home.
And that's the... pre-cool Doctor Who stuff. That's
yeah,
the
that's
old
like
school.
No, that's
right.
The legit like yeah. 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s Doctor Who up until it ended.
Right.
The only Doctor Who I've never seen is the Eighth Doctor, which was a made-for-TV movie where they were, I think they were trying to transition it into an American show or sell it as an American show. Like, so the Seventh Doctor was over. They had an idea for a thing. They cast a new guy.
Mm-hmm.
They did this made-for-TV movie as the launching point, and it just didn't take. And I never saw it. I've never like it.
Is it on Netflix? Or?
No, you can buy it. It's really expensive.
Of course, yeah.
It's like $30.
It's funny how that works.
To buy like a 90 or not even 90, probably like 70 minute TV show, and then they started over with Christopher Eccleston in like 2007.
Yeah, just.
I see like bumper stickers.
It's printing money, man.
Like
those guys,
TARDIS bumper stickers.
Oh yeah,
I'm like,
it's all over the place.
Bumper stickers. Like, I want to go on record say it was hard to be me as a kid, and I feel like it's not hard to be that kid today.
No,
pisses me off.
I've heard Hardwick talk about all that stuff.
It's really annoying,
you know, because it's like not only were you that guy, but there was no internet to reach out to find at least other people across the country who were that guy.
My friends made fun of me because I watched stuff like Doctor Who. They're like, okay.
And those were nerds.
Yeah, like, they were nerds. Right. They were goddamn nerds. And they were still too cool for it. Yeah, it was weird. It's a weird revelation. And like, if you were... Well, I got whistled at by some high school girls because I was wearing Captain America T-shirt and hat, which is like, you know, what I wear every other day. But I drove home and I told my wife, I was like, oh, my God, these girls were like, woo, Captain America, all right. I'm like, if I was in the same grade as them in 1996, their boyfriends would have come over and punched me in the dick. I mean, like, they wouldn't have been whistling. Like, look at that nerd. Go beat him up. You know, like, it's just... It's very strange to me.
Yeah, we, I don't know. We bared the cross. We're allowing those kids to have productive lives now.
You know what? I don't want them to have productive lives. I want them to go through the same trials and tribulations. It makes the love of what you like so much stronger.
I was going
to
say, it's curious now, you know,
I don't
how
like,
are they going to come out?
I don't like seeing Fairweather fans. Like, and I know that's a sports thing, and, you know, people always, you know, like when the Blackhawks are doing well, everyone owns a Blackhawks shirt.
Except you.
I don't know, because I don't like sports. But that's the point, is I don't like sports. I don't want to associate with it because I don't care about it. What I hate is when I see somebody wearing something like a cool shirt, and I'm like, oh, cool shirt. I like that. And they're like, oh. I'm like, why are you wearing the shirt? You can't wear the shirt. I'm not going to wear like an AC/DC shirt because I don't like AC/DC. I've never liked AC/DC. Right. I don't know. I know like three songs. That's it. It's not for me. But I don't want to represent it. So I think that's what drives me a little crazy about the nerd generation is that there's people just wearing superhero shirts all over the place. But if you ask them about a superhero, they're like,
you put it on, it's just one of those things, and now it's accepted. But before, if you put it on, if you were identifying yourself as that,
yeah,
you had to prepare for what the day had in store for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
And
which was
that's
not
gone,
fun stuff.
Right. Possibly, yeah.
Probably picking your books up off the floor 9 or 10 times that day. Yeah. I feel weird because I have a Deadpool shirt, and I'm not a diehard Deadpool fan. But, I mean, like, I know his origins.
You know more than 90%
I know
Deadpool.
More than most of the other people wearing Deadpool shirts. Yes. But I'm just saying, like, I'm not up on current Deadpool, but I know Deadpool Rob Liefeld style.
Oh, that's that. There you go.
Oh, X-Force, New Mutants.
Let's do some, yeah. You got any more questions?
I'm okay.
Okay.
I feel like the questions were a little redundant because we talked about most of them. Only an hour and 8 minutes.
Oh, good.
It's a great, it's a great podcast.
We rambled a fair amount.
Had a lot of fun. Anything you've been reading lately you want to talk about? I feel like we could talk a little bit about like stuff we're currently doing. No.
No. I mean, the only thing I've been reading, I read The Martian. I would love to do The Martian. And I mean Matt Damon when I say that.
You want to do Matt Damon? Hey-o!
I'm a dad. I got a real job, and not that Tim doesn't, but
I'm a dad, and I don't have a real job.
I didn't mean to imply, but it's there. And you know, so time is limited, and so that's why I love this stuff because it makes me go back and read some of this stuff, or makes me read some new stuff.
Yeah,
you know, and it's what I like. But no, I got a great education book that we could talk about. Yeah, it's really
cool.
Gonna no, not at all.
Yeah, I've been slacking on books this summer. I don't know. I read all the books I read, pre-summer. I read Martian and I read Ready Player One, but
you're right.
But like comic books, I'd read like 100 comic books a month. I mean, that's I decided I wanted to read post Ultimatum. So in the Ultimate comic books universe, there's the Ultimate comic books like Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate X-Men, right. Ultimate Fantastic Four, Ultimate everything else.
Ultimates,
yeah. But then there's like these sprinkles of like Daredevil and things like that. Yeah. And I've read most of that stuff.
Ultimate Team-Up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was like the first Ultimate Team-Up and Ultimate Spider-Man were the first two Ultimate books. So I decided that I was behind. So I looked and I had read, they had Ultimatum at the to end Ultimate X-Men.
Right.
And then they had, that ended Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Okay.
And then you relaunched with Ultimate Spider-Man from that point. And then they did like a bunch of little one-offs of like Ultimate New Avengers and Ultimate Secret Avengers. It was all Mark Miller and it was really good.
It's good.
And I decided that at that point I had not read any much further. So like Hickman took over for Ultimates. I read that. Jeff Loeb did an Ultimate X book, which was like kind of like them putting a new team together. And it was like Wolverine's son.
It's a name I do not trust anymore.
Yeah, it was not bad.
Okay.
It was not great.
I mean, the old stuff.
It was Arthur Adams on art, which is like one of my most favorite 80s era artists.
He's, I don't know if I'm familiar.
He does like bubbly. I love
if I saw it.
Art Adams is great.
Yeah.
I took it upon myself to read about 60 Ultimate books. So I read like, I caught up all the way through Miles Morales, I'm into that run. I'm into the Ultimates. I'm into Ultimate X-Men, which was relaunched again. So they did Ultimate X, and then they made a new team, and they did that. And I'm working my way toward Cataclysm. That's what I want to read.
Okay.
That's where Galactus is there.
Nice.
I don't know how Galactus gets there, but I'm sure I'll find out.
So that's what I need. I need an assignment, you know? Because if I'm left to my own devices, I'm playing video games or you know, yelling at my kids.
Or both.
Right. About not letting me play my video games.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for doing the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
As always. And as always, guys, Greg, let us know what you think.